The green hills of Zululand were so utterly different from the desolation of the Kalahari or the monstrous dunes of the Namib that Santen had difficulty believing that she was on the same continent. But then she remembered they were on the opposite side of Africa, 1,000 miles and more from the finger of God. Gary Courtney stopped the Fiat on the crest of the steep escarpment high above the Babuanstroom River and switched off the engine and helped both women down. He took Shasa from Santen and led them to the edge. "There," he pointed, "that's Tunis Kraal, where both Sean and I, and then Michael, were all born." It stood at the foot of the slope, surrounded by rambling gardens. Even from this distance, Santen could see that the gardens were unkempt and overgrown as tropical jungle. Tall palms and flowering spathidia trees were hung with untrammelled mantles of purple bougainvillea creepers, and the ornamental fish ponds were poisonous green with algae growth. "Of course the house is rebuilt after the fire," Gary hesitated, and a shadow passed behind his muddy blue eyes. "For in that fire Michael's mother had died." Then he hurried on. "I've added to it over the years." Santen smiled, for the house reminded her of a haphazard old woman who had thrown on garments of 12 different fashions, none of which suited her. Grecian columns and Georgian red brick glared sullenly at the white-painted curlicue gables in the Cape Dutch style. The twisted barley-sugar chimney-pots huddled in uneasy alliance with crenellated buttresses and towers of stonework. Beyond it, stretching to the horizon, were waving fields of green sugar-cane that moved in the light wind like the surface of a summer sea. "And over there is Lion Kop." Gary turned to point to the west, where the escarpment made a stately sweep, forming a heavily forested amphitheatre around the town of Ladyburg. "That's Sean's land, all of it from my boundary, there, right as far as you can see. Between us we own the whole escarpment. That's the homestead of Lion Kop. You can just make out the roof there through the trees."
"It's so beautiful," Santen breathed. "Oh, look, there are mountains beyond, with snow on the peaks."
"The Drakensberg Mountains, 100 miles away."
"And that?"
Santen pointed over the roofs of the town, over the complex of sugar refinery and lumber mills, to an elegant white mansion on the slope of the valley.
"Is that Kotne land also?"
"Yes." Gary's expression changed. "Dirk Kotne, Sean's son."
"I didn't know that General Kotne had a son."
"Sometimes he wishes he did not," Gary murmured. And then, briskly, before she could pursue it, "Come along, everybody. It's almost lunchtime. And if we are in luck and the postman has delivered my cable, the servants will be expecting us."
"How many gardeners do you keep, Mynheer?"
Anna asked, as the Fiat puttered up Tunis Kraal's long, twisting driveway, and Anna surveyed the confusion of vegetation with a disapproving frown.
"4, I think, or maybe 5.
"Well, Mynheer, you're not getting your money's worth,"
Anna told him severely, and Santen smiled at the certainty that from now on the unsuspecting bevy of gardeners would be earning every sou of their wages. Then her attention was diverted.
"Oh, look!"
She stood up impulsively and gripped the front seat, holding onto her hat with the other hand. On the far side of the white-painted fence that ran beside the driveway, a troop of yearlings took mock alarm at the clattering Fiat and fled across the lush green kikuyu grass paddock, manes streaming, hooves flying, and glossy hides flashing in the sunlight.
"One of your duties, my dear, will be to see that the horses are kept in exercise."
Gary twisted round in the driver's seat to smile at her. "And we will have to pick out a pony for young Michael here."
"He's not yet 2 years old," Anna intervened.
"Never too young, Mefro." Gary transferred the smile to her, and it changed to a lascivious leer.
"Or too old."
Although her frown stayed firmly in place, Anna could not prevent the softening of her eyes before she turned her face away from him.
"Ah, good! The servants are expecting us after all," Gary exclaimed, and braked the Fiat to a halt before the double teak front doors. The servants stepped forward in order of seniority to be introduced, beginning with the Zulu chef in his tall white hat and ending with the grooms and the gardeners and stable boys, all of them clapping their hands respectfully and beaming with white teeth so that Shasa leaped in Santan's arms and let out an excited shout.
"Ah, Bayit!"
the chief laughed, and he gave Shasa the royal salute.
"All hail, little chieftain, and may you grow as strong and straight as your father."
They went into Tiernas Kraal, and Gary led them proudly through the cavernous rooms in their genteel disarray. Though Anna ran her finger over every object that came in range and scowled at the dust that came off it, yet from the long baronial dining room with hunting trophies decorating the walls to the library with more expensive but dusty volumes stacked on the desk and the floor than on the shelves, the homestead of Tiernas Kraal possessed a benign and friendly atmosphere. Santan felt at home almost immediately. "Oh, it will be so good to have young people here again, and pretty girls and a small boy," Gary put it into words. "The old place so needs livening up."
"And a little cleaning up won't hurt it either," growled Anna.
But Gary was dashing up the central staircase, sprightly as a lad with excitement. "Come along, let me show you your rooms." The room Gary had selected for Anna was beside his own suite, and although the significance of this was lost on Santan, Anna lowered her eyes and looked like a demure bulldog as she noticed that a discreet door connected with Gary's dressing room. "This will be your room, my dear." Gary led Santan along the upper gallery and ushered her into a huge sunny room with French doors opening onto a wide terrace that overlooked the gardens.
"It's lovely."
Santan clapped her hands with delight and ran out onto the terrace. "Of course it needs redecorating, but you must choose your own colours and carpets and curtains. Now come along. Let's look at young Michael's room." As Gary opened the door across the gallery facing Santan's room, his mood changed dramatically. And as she stepped into the room, Santan realised the reason. Michael's presence was everywhere. From the framed photographs on the walls, he smiled down at her. Michael, in rugby football togs, standing arms folded across his chest with 14 other grinning young men. Michael in white cricket flannels with bat in hand. Michael with a shotgun and a brace of pheasant. And the shock drained the blood from Santan's face. "I thought it would be appropriate for Michel to have his father's room," Gary murmured apologetically. "Of course, my dear, if you don't agree, there are 15 other rooms to choose from." Slowly, Santan looked around her at the shotguns in their racks, and the fishing rods and cricket bats standing in the corner, at the books on the shelves above the writing desk, at the oilskins and tweed jackets hanging from their pegs.
"Yes," she nodded, "this will be Shasa's room, and we'll keep it just as it is."
"Oh, good," Gary nodded happily. "I'm so glad you agree." And he bustled out into the gallery, shouting orders at the servants in Zulu. Santan moved slowly around the room, touching the bed on which Michael had slept, stopping to press a fold of the rough tweed jacket against her cheek, and imagining she could smell that special clean odour of his body upon the cloth, moving on to his desk and tracing with her fingertips his initials, M.C., carved in the oaken top, lifting down a copy of Jock of the Bushveld from the shelf and opening it at the flyleaf. This book was stolen from Michael Courtney. She closed the book and turned back to the door. There was a mild commotion in the passageway, and Gary bustled back, directing two of the Zulu servants who were staggering under the weight of a child's cot. Its high, sliding sides and massive mahogany construction would have caged a full-grown lion. "This was Michael's," I think it should hold his son. What do you think, my dear? Before Santan could answer, the telephone rang demandingly in the hall downstairs.
Show them where to put it, my dear,
Gary called as he dashed out again. He was gone for almost half an hour, and Santan heard the telephone jangling at irregular intervals. When Gary came rushing in again, he was bubbling over.
Damn telephone just won't stop. Everybody wants to meet you, my dear. You are a very famous lady. Another ruddy journalist wants to interview you.
I hope you told them no, Papa.
It seemed that in the last 2 months, every journalist in the union had requested an interview. The story of the lost girl rescued from the African wilds with Renfant had for the moment captivated the fickle interest of every newspaper editor from Johannesburg and Sydney to London and New York.
I sent him packing, Gary assured her.
But there is someone else, very eager to see you again.
Who is it?
My brother, General Courtney. He and his wife had come up from their home in Durban to their other home in Leeuwenkop. They want us to go across to have luncheon and spend the day with them tomorrow. I accepted on your behalf. I hope I did the right thing.
Oh, yes. Oh, indeed, yes.